Evening. We'll see how long that lasts. We discussed a number of matters in closed session, anticipated litigation, a public employee employment agreement for the assistant superintendent of business, and public employee agreements for the superintendent and assistant superintendent for ed services. We also consider.
So that would be great, just saying handwritten, like, welcome to SLO High. As a senior, I could say it was great way to spend my 4 years. I hope you're excited, all that good stuff. So that was really cool. Next week on Friday, we're doing a community movie night, and we're going to have elementary school kids from all the elementary schools come down next to our new gym. We have a big screen and projector. We're going to show The Jungle Book, so that's very exciting. Just try to get the community involved in the San Luis Obispo High School ASB. And also on Friday, we're having a new student lunch. We have 85 new students at SLO High. So we're going to give them free pizza and have our whole ASB there and get to know them, and they can meet each other as well. And then other than that, we had Skills USA over the summer. And San Luis Obispo High School did great at the state level, but we also sent 5 to the national level. And we had some good turnout in the awards area. So keep in mind, we're competing against 49 other people, one from each state. So there's 50 total competitors in each area when I read off how we did. First off, Daniel Thorson, who's going to be a junior this year, got 8th place in welding, 8 out of 50. Joey Arhar got 5th place in computer programming. He's going to be a senior this year. Jeremy Rands, who graduated, got 3rd place in the nation in technical drafting. Zoltan Shapiro got 3rd place in automotive service technology. And Alec Griffith won 1st place in the nation for technical math, related technical math. So he is the national champion. And all 5 of them were from San Luis Obispo High School, so that was fantastic. So we had a great year in Skills USA, and all of us are really looking forward to this year at SLO High. So thank you.
And Scott, will we be seeing you on our monthly reports?
Yes. Excellent. Yeah. I'm excited to say I am the board meeting liaison for SLO High. So excellent. I'm very excited. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Enjoy your evening. Stay as long as you want, and we'll see you at the next meeting. Okay. And next we will move to the approval of minutes. And we have a number of sets. The minutes of June 25th, 2013. And there are some corrections. I think this is the one. No, this is okay. I don't have any corrections. Anybody else have any corrections or additions? Okay. Well, entertain a motion of approval.
I'll move to approve the minutes of June 25th study session. Is that the one we're talking about?
Yes. No, I'm sorry. Is that what it is?
That's the first one.
Yeah, okay.
The first
that's the
4.02.
Yeah, the study session building tour.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. We have a motion by Ellen and a second by Jim. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. And next we will move to the minutes of the same day. I barely remember. Okay, thanks, Catherine. There was one of these sets, and this may not be it. Okay, this isn't it. And I'll second that. And any other corrections or additions to the minutes? Okay. Motion by Catherine, a second by the chair. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Next, we have the minutes of June 27th, 2013. Let's see those. Those look okay to me. Anybody have any changes? Okay. I'll move approval of the minutes of June 27th, 2013.
I'll second.
Okay. Any additions or corrections? All in favor? Aye. All opposed? Passes 6-0. And last but not least, the minutes of the board workshop of July 23rd, 2013.
Move approval.
You know, there was one, and the only reason I remember it is because it had Catherine moving and then seconding something. And I thought, but maybe it's already been fixed.
Oh, So won't be a workshop because you took no action at that meeting.
We didn't take any action. I know that's what. So maybe it was a figment of my imagination, and the district will survive. Marilyn, did you move approval?
Okay.
Second. And Jim second. Okay. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Thank you all. Correspondence. We had no correspondence at this time, as far as I know. Do you have anything, Jim?
We have added one piece of correspondence.
Bus stops.
Hold on. John?
We had a letter from Rebecca Jansen regarding
issues
related to bus transportation. And are you here this evening? We'll be just a moment. I thought, okay, I recognize that name. Okay, good. Hear from you in person. That'd be good. And why don't we just move to public comment? Okay. In public comment, you can address the board on any issue, particularly like it if there are issues that are not later on the agenda. And you have 3 minutes, and please take.
Thanks to Mr. Pinkton, I'm appraised that our stop is back in, which I appreciate. But this is, you know, this is stuff that should have been caught before the bus schedules went out. The other aspect that I just wanted to bring up is the amount of time our kids are spending on the bus. It's a 3-mile drive to Los Ranchos. Currently, my kids personally, with the latest schedules, my kids would be on the bus for 98 minutes a day, 38 minutes in the morning, 60 minutes in the evening. And I believe this is not an effective use of the bus system. You know, this is not about how expensive the bus is. Price is really not an issue. We just want safe and effective transportation for the Tank Farm kids who are mainly feeding Los Ranchos. So I thank you for your attention to the matter, and I hope you consider ways to fund the transportation department, support it, so we can make the transportation from the Tank Farm neighborhoods to Los Ranchos more safe and effective. Thank you.
And we have one other term?
Yes, we do.
Hi, my name is Diane Dostlek, and I'm also a parent at Los Ranchos and live in the Tank Farm neighborhoods as well. And first of all, I'd like to thank the transportation staff for making some big efforts in the last week or so to try to appease the parents and address our concerns about the lack of stops and the length of time on the bus. They've done a pretty good job of that. I'm happy about that. Thank you. I even had Annie Sharp email me on a Sunday, so she's been working hard trying to get this all working. I'm not happy with how this whole thing came about, how the parents were notified. I know you had your meetings. You were talking about raising the rates of the bus and laying off staff members. I did not come to that meeting because I wasn't going to come and complain about you guys raising my rates to ride the bus when you're laying off people. That, you know, you got to look at the trade-offs there. And I heard you getting rid of the high school bus, and it didn't affect me. I assumed when you were looking at ways to save some money that maybe you'd consider getting rid of the Sinsheimer school bus, which runs through our neighborhood, and our neighborhood has not been in the Sinsheimer district for 10 years, yet you're still running parallel buses through there. I assumed that was the kind of changes that would be made, but instead, the changes that were made, you decimated the number of stops in our neighborhoods, you increased the travel time tremendously for the kids in our neighborhoods. You're putting our elementary school children, first graders, kindergartners possibly, on the bus with middle school kids. They're going to be at the bus stop with them, possibly unsupervised. Some parents send their kids out unsupervised there. And that just is not a good mix. I mean, it's bad enough kindergarten, sixth grades, but adding the middle school mix in there too, it's just not the type of behavior I want to see modeled by my children at this age. Let me see. That pretty much summed up what I wanted to say. So thank you for giving me the time to talk. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay. And I know staff is aware of these issues and are still working on a number of transportation-related issues. We appreciate you bringing the information to us. And we will move on to the budget update. Will that be your opening act?
My first shot at it. All right.
Mr. Pinkerton.
I don't think I can live up to Mr. Miller, but I'll try. I'll try. Well, to be quite honest with you, it's been interesting coming into this position at a time when really school finance is really up in the air for everybody. I mean, really, all my peers, assistant subs, personnel, or business people, I should say, throughout the state right now are really wrestling with what does LCFF, local control funding formula, mean to school districts. And so for me, what I've done is I've been to the school service update earlier in July, as well as there's a few different things that are coming out pretty soon. There's an LCFF workshop that's coming up. I've met with Mary Jarvis at the county to kind of get some insights from her, and really worked with school services in general, some of the people there to wrestle with some of our issues in terms of maintenance of effort for transportation, adult ed, other issues that we're facing and are unknowns. To be quite honest with you, everything is unknown. I mean, the state created this system, and they really now are kind of like writing the guidelines and explaining how it's really going to roll out, how it's going to work. So I believe Julie Lang, even today, got some correspondence that that they'll give us further direction about how this is going to be laid out after the second apportionment, which is not until next June. So, I mean, that's the kind of timeline that districts are facing in trying to develop budgets, figure out what finances are like throughout the state of California right now with the new funding formula. Now, as a basic aid school district, we're not in that type of tenuous situation because we're not an LCFF district. But it's just for you to know, it's really kind of a turmoil time when people really don't, we haven't got the specifics back from this.
It's good to kick the school year off, and we're going to start school, as you know, on Thursday, and we did contact the city of San Luis Obispo yesterday to ask when they planned on having the construction completed on Johnson Street, and so they're not going to be done by Thursday, but they are going to start the barricading off of the streets after school starts and hopefully have it all completed for the day by the time school day gets out. So they're working with us. It's a big project, and so we expect the first couple of days we'll be able to iron out any wrinkles that might occur typically in the beginning of a year. So what I'd like to do, if I could, is spend a moment to introduce our newest team members and give them a chance to for you to see them. You've met and know some of these people anyway, but I'd like to introduce them formally. So if I could ask the team, you know who I am referring to come on up. Kim, come on up. Just do it again anyway. Come on. Yeah, there we go. Okay, so what I'd like to do, please come here on the sides, fan out. All right, so part of the excitement of the new year is that we have some shifting and we've had some changes occur, and I have to tell you how excited I am. We have transitioned, I think, beautifully, and we've brought on board, I think, some of the top educators in the state, and as well as made some strategic movements of people that will give sort of a fresh look and a fresh start to some of our new programs. So if I could start on the right, and I'll work my way to the left. So over here we have Mrs. Kim McGrath, and she is our new Secondary Director of Learning, Achievement, and Innovation. And so as a reminder, she is overseeing what was formerly led by two directors in our district office. And because of budget reductions, we lost one administrative position. So we had to find that special someone, and we did. The more I get to work with Kim, the more I realize that we hit gold. So welcome, Kim. Our newest personnel director, because of the shifting to get Mr. Pinkerton in the assistant soup role, we had an opening in our personnel department. And so our new director for personnel is Kristen Newland. And Kristen is coming to us from the County Office of Education as their personnel director for a decade, and she's super well-known and regarded throughout the state. In addition to that, she was a pretty well-respected and high-functioning, high-performing elementary principal in Templeton prior to that. Of course, all of you know Mrs. Diane Frost, and she is our new Executive Director of Student Support Services, and she is, as you know, a former principal for many years at Los Osos Middle School and then at Laguna, latest at Laguna Middle School. So, Diane, welcome. We look forward to that. And because of her site experience as a site principal for many years, she's going to bring to the Department of Student Support Services that perspective. And she's going to bring so that the department isn't just going to be sort of focused on the special education components. It's actually going to really envelop the spirit behind the initiatives in a more holistic way that I know Diane is already starting to do. So welcome aboard. To my immediate right, someone who's been with us in our school district for nearly a decade. I guess this will be his 10th year here. And formerly the vice principal at Laguna Middle School. And Mr. Marinello has agreed to become our principal at Pacific Beach High School. And so what I know of Andy is that he is someone, I knew this the minute I met him when I came here 3 years ago, that he is someone with a heart of gold, and he just really does know how to connect with kids. He knows how to connect with families, especially families and kids that are struggling with their daily lives and for one reason or another. And so Andy's going to be a great leader for the Pack Beach School, and he's got lots of support, so we're excited for him to be here. To my left, I just met him 30 minutes ago. It's just wonderful. This is Chris Jones. And Chris is our dean at Morro Bay High School. And let me tell you really quickly, Mr. Jones is the current vice principal or assistant principal at Paso Robles High School. And his background comes with a tremendous amount of credibility and respect, and he's super well regarded with everyone that I've spoken to about him. I understand his mother used to work in our district and was super highly regarded as a counselor for a number of years in our district. So we're super fortunate to have that particular middle school under John's leadership became a state Title I model school and also became an iPad one-on-one iPad model school where educators from around the state would come and see what he was doing. We had several employees come to me, just so you know, before the Laguna job opened up, I had employees, teachers coming to me saying, I just went to Santa Lucia Middle School, and John Calandro is the principal there, and he has an amazing thing going on there with technology. You should see it. Because I know one of your initiatives has to do with classrooms of the future. You need to see this. So I plant those away as I move along in my life. And John, welcome aboard. And his partner at Laguna Middle School is someone that's been in our district for a number of years, super well regarded as a teacher. And his background actually is, and probably a degree of claim to fame that I want you to know is he's a middle school guy. And he came from Orcutt. And he was a well-respected teacher there. We took him on here. He became a teacher at Morro Bay High School and did some amazing things. He then became a teacher on special assignment, a master teacher, instructional coach at Laguna last year, and was much, much appreciated for his leadership efforts, and we caught that. And he became the dean at San Luis Obispo High School, and then he ends up now as in this promotion, if you will, as vice principal now with John at Laguna Middle School. So it's a dynamite team, and I am just super excited. Can you believe this? This is just an amazing group of educators. Welcome, everybody. Okay.
And so, John, before you go away, John Calandro, hey, yeah. You, yeah. Over here. Yeah. So what is it that, how did you begin your career in education? Who did you begin it with? I think this is an important thing that everybody would like to hear about this.
Well, my first job was as an aide for the resource program with Elise Unger. So, and I was just telling Chris that one of Elise's former student teachers just got hired in Templeton as a teacher. So Elise's track record is very good. So I'm thinking, if you want a job, go see Elise. Not because she's connected to Chris, but because she's training us to be better educators. So thank you.
Well,
Welcome aboard, John. Instead of spending a whole lot of time on the bulleted issues, what instead I did, in the spirit of brevity, is what we did was we put together a summary update for the things that typically are the beginning of the school questions. And so we have our enrollment and staffing projections. And we're actually looking like we're flattening out. We're not seeing any alarming trends at this point. And so it appears at this point that we're right on target with our staffing projections. We have some areas that are tight, and we will wait. As you all know, our common practice is to wait for a couple weeks to see what the faces and the students that come and sit in the seats. So that's how we look at this. I want you to know that all of our administrators who are going to evaluate teachers or enter into that relationship have been taking the TeachScape assessment, which of course is, like we mentioned before, is a rigorous testing process to basically ensure calibration. So if I'm a teacher in this school, the principal will give me an assessment of my teaching practice, and that will be fairly stable in relation to what another teacher would get from a different administrator, or a same teacher would get from a different administrator. So this calibration effort is extremely difficult to achieve. Lots of effort. I want you to know my entire administrative team is going through this as well. Mr. Pinkerton stands out on the executive level team as being the only one that has completed it. So Mr. Robinette, I saw his computer on today, and he was going through the videos, and I was as well. So I have about 17 hours in right now just in this, and I haven't even gotten to the six-hour assessment. So it's a lot of responsibility that falls on our shoulders. But since we're expecting principals to do this and teachers are trusting the principals to give them good feedback, I think it's only fair that we lead by example. So that's what we're doing, and I wanted you to know that that's well on our way. Additionally, we're excited. And Laguna staffs met, and it's my understanding that Mr. Scaldi and Dr. Pruitt ran that training, and I believe it went really well. They actually went through TeachScape, which was, let's look at lessons, let's see what a 4, a 3, a 2, and a 1 look like, and had the staff work through that. And then the coastal preschools, we opened up our Baywood preschool program, and I want you to know there's a waiting list. That's a pretty amazing situation. And so we're super excited. We have an amazing preschool teacher there. We have a fabulous facility that we're going to look at as the weeks and months go by and see how that works. And I fully expect the state preschool partnership that we've engaged in out at Del Mar to be successful as well. So right now we have 77 preschool students in our district. We fully expect that to move up to 90. Within the next few weeks. And I want you to know these are right now 77 students attending our preschool programs that would not otherwise go to preschool. I can't say that enough. That is an amazing situation, especially when you talk to kindergarten teachers who receive these students in a year and talk to them about what that means. So for me, it's all about extrapolation. And then those students then move into first and second and third, and next thing you know, our achievement gap is going to close. It will. With that said, this is these are the highlights that I wanted to share with you at this point. Next board meeting, I'll share additional information.
I have a quick question, if I could.
Yes.
On enrollment staffing projections, when you says the elementary schools are tight at a few grade levels, is at 410 the possibility of split grade classes?
Yeah, there already are split multi-grade classes at virtually all of our schools. And that's unfortunately a function of trying to staff
close to the 25-to-1 ratio K3, and then but you know what we're going to need to do is continue to monitor those. Some split level classes are easier to do than others, and we're trying to minimize them. And so we have typically more experienced teachers doing the multi-grade classes because it is more challenging with the standards. So,
and as far as the transportation issues, I know that you and staff have been working, and frankly, it's, you know, there's been some rough spots, but we knew that was going to happen. I mean, this was a drastic cut to our budget as far as transportation is concerned, and I just encourage you and staff to keep that connection with parents and and keep looking at those resources that you've been doing both with RTA, City of SLO, and all those things. And related to that, have we had any conversations with the relevant police agencies regarding the possible need for traffic control on first day of school, particularly with the Johnson Avenue situation?
Yeah, we contacted the city yesterday. I have not contacted the chief of police in San Luis. We were scheduled to meet for coffee last week, but I wasn't able to make that work. So I will connect with him before school starts and make sure they're aware of it. We have our SRO contracts in place. So we have our SROs at both Morro Bay High, San Luis Obispo High, as well as being on duty for schools in particular. So they're aware of it. In terms of the transportation issue, Mr. Millar, I want you to know that that I believe that it's hard to hear this, I'm sure, but if you're being directly impacted right now. But I believe it's because of these issues right now that we're going to be forced to look at greater efficiencies and greater really evaluate the needs. Because we have families, we've had a model for many years that has been super accommodating. And we've been able to do that. We've been able to do that because we would just add another driver and another bus and another route. And when you cut $1 million from transportation because the state stopped funding us for transportation. And so we're kind of on this, doing this on our own now, and you know, from our general fund, which is an important factor for families. And I, you know, I'm one of them. I'm a parent that is trying to manage this as well. And so I hear it in my community. I hear it over the emails. And so Mr. Pinkerton, he has been putting 100% effort into trying to look at this strategically. And it's going to take us some time to kind of iron out those wrinkles. But I'm fully of the opinion that we're going to be able to figure this thing out.
And that's an important point. So the transportation costs come out of the general fund.
Correct.
Which is what basically pays 86% of our general fund is for personnel.
Correct.
Teachers, custodians, folks.
Correct.
And we've seen kind of the consequences last year of what happens when we lose funding. So, good. I have utmost confidence in you all working it out with parents as best we can. Any other comments or questions, Marilyn?
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I appreciate the concerted effort that Mr. Pinkerton has put in over the last really week or so. Since Mr. Quesenberry really ran the flag up the pole about the difficulties we were going to have getting students from Los Osos to Morro Bay High School. Approximately 100 students, if I understand correctly,
are 109.
Affected, 109 affected by the loss of transportation.
Right.
And Mr. Quesenberry brought it up. You know, we got on board, Mr. yourself and Mr. Pinkerton, and it appears now that we have lined up a bus route that will work for students for zero period, first period, late start Monday, and a bus coming home. So it's really critically important for those kids to have that bus, and Los Osos is so torn up that trying to even navigate your way through town is very difficult for those of us who are residents. It appears that there may be some mitigation funds available through the sewer project that could potentially reimburse us for the cost of running this bus, which was a stroke of genius to try to find that out, and I really applaud Supervisor Bruce Gibson for pursuing those funds for us. So thank you to Mr. Pinkerton and Mr. Quisenberry for bringing it up, to all of you for taking quick action, because we only had 4 or 5 days before we had to notify students of what was available to them. I'm really glad that we have something in place.
And just so everyone's aware, we have driven all over our district in our vehicles and looked at the routes, and even with that effort, we're still still learning of some problem areas, and of course the time constraints. Those are all legitimate issues that I need to wrestle with, and I know Mr. Pinkerton is on it, and so at this point, you know, I also want you to know that I took bus number 3 from Marigold Shopping Center the other morning.
The city bus.
The city bus in San Luis Obispo to Choro and Monterey. I made some new friends on the bus. I had a few comments like, what are you doing on here? What are you doing, sir? And don't I know you? One of those things. And so I got off at Choro and Marsh. And I walked. It took me 15 minutes. It was a really nice walk. It was uneventful, so to speak, besides the fact that I'm a little out of shape. And got to the tennis courts in plenty of time for school to start. So I think we're, in terms of the routes for some of the high school students, as long as they can get to there, there's the city of San Luis Obispo, the RTA out in the coastal area, and also the Morro Bay Transit Authority. They've done all just really, really good things to help sort of mitigate some of these impacts. So I want to give kudos out to those folks as well.
Okay. I just want to say that I think this is one of these issues that will continue to come before us as we, you know, depending on how the budget shakes out this year, because it is, you know, there are many districts around who've eliminated busing altogether, and we're trying to keep a patchwork.
Yes.
Patchwork transportation in place to serve our students as best we can with the least possible impact on our budget. So we're kind of walking a tightrope to keep this in place. I appreciate very much that, you know, you parents are seeming to understand what we're trying to do, but I think this is an issue that we're not going to be able to say, oh, you know, a few years ago, my kids were able to get on a bus and get off a bus, and it was simple, because this is something that we're trying to continue to piece together. And I want to say I appreciate the diligence that Mr. Pinkerton has shown in kind of sussing this out on what's available, and the seeking the mitigation funds. That's great. Because
these by no means are the only things we're working on. However, these are the things that we're going to put metrics to and really examine. So I'd like to, if I could for a moment, talk to you about those 6 things in particular, each of which have points. So Kim had, you aren't going to be able to read this too well, but at the very top, the biggest circle is student achievement and accountability. That is why we're here. And that's why it's the biggest circle. The second circle within the concentric circles is the principal and teacher evaluation system. The reason for that, of course, is we need to support the leaders and the teachers who work with kids every day. And we need to make sure that they bring their A game to the table every day to the best of their abilities. And we need to support that. The third part is professional training. So we absolutely know and realize that any great professional needs support, and they need a professional community that supports them. So that's the next circle. The smaller circle underneath that is technology and innovation. We're doing some pretty amazing things in our district, and this is one of those things that you want to see us continue to do. Then, of course, budget and facilities. But it's not to suggest budget is the smaller of an issue. This isn't necessarily that way, but it's a critical function of aligning resources with our educational objectives. There's a template now and a new mandate with the Common Core funds from the state, as well as the LCFF movement, and the governor's budget approval will require that the budget process and the educational goals are established concurrently, which makes great sense, right? And so now there's a template for that, and we will follow that, more to come. With facilities, I think we need to examine and reboot and revise and recreate our master facility plan, which hasn't been updated since 1987. So we have some work to do this year, and I've been well on my way to kind of start that process. And then the last circle is communication. And as you can see, we're not perfect. In fact, every time you change something or modify something or try to do something different, communication is really the barrier of the difference between success or failure for that initiative. And so this is a very important component. So if we go to the next one, I'm just going to highlight some specific areas that we'll be looking at. Under student achievement and accountability, Common Core, which Mr. Robinette will speak to in the next item, Common Core state standards will and have created quite the controversy and the conversation in the field of it, in educational circles throughout the nation. 45 or 46 states in the nation have adopted these standards. I happen to believe they're right on the money, but speaking of that, will the state back it up with the adequate resources required for classroom teachers to be successful? That's the million-dollar question. The second bullet are SMART goals, and I'm sharing that here because SMART goals are all about the measurement. It's all about what is it you're trying to achieve, and then work backwards from that with your plan. So then to do that, you have to create the third bullet, which is assessment. So we're going to need to use data to inform whether or not what we're doing is, if we're making it. So in the messiness of Common Core, as we transition to that, we're establishing very specific goals, which I will share with you at another time when we do a first student achievement report in October. And then the assessment, how are we going to measure our success? We're going to keep student achievement accountability at the forefront of what we do. It just might look different because we're not necessarily doing California standards tests or the STAR exam anymore. Okay, so then the next component is principal and teacher evaluation. So this one has everything to do with training, providing feedback and support. What I really want to say to you is this is, as all of you know about my team, this is essential for us to achieve our goals. If teachers are not and principals are not supported, are not given what they need, we're not going to land where we expect to land. So, and everyone who's had a great teacher before knows what I'm talking about. We need to support that. Okay, the third component is professional development, and this builds our professional community, and that's teacher training and support that's high quality. And as you've helped us do, you've encouraged us to continue the instructional coaching model, especially at the elementary level, where the coaching really helps model a pretty complex environment of the range of learners and the challenges that teachers are facing to make sure kids are ready for the secondary learning environments. And so that's what we're focusing on there. Technology and innovation, we're kicking off, as I said before, the STEAM program at Los Osos Middle School. That's the first bullet there. And I am encouraging each of you to go visit Los Osos Middle School and just walk through and see what you see. I think you will be amazed at what they've put together there. The team is original. They're doing some super creative things with kids. And so the sixth grade experience in Los Osos looks very different than the sixth grade experience anywhere else in our district. And I think it's really important that you know this and observe it, and I and just observe how the day in the life of a student is when you go and visit. I think you'll be impressed. The second component is with his team and with all of us and you to design this process. The state CSBA, Mr. Unger, gave me a wonderful template from CSBA that it's called the LCAP, and it's a template that really does a beautiful job of arranging how the budget process marries itself to the educational objectives of a district. So we'll be bringing that to you for you to examine and look at, and then there will be a demand within the template and within the process to include more buy-in from the community. So you'll understand as we go through this that more and more members of our community will say, you know, this is fine, but this is probably more important to us. And you'll be able to hear that as a board. And then the facility master plan we talked about. And I believe we're getting to the last part, which is communications. And I tell you, this is the most challenging thing for a school district and to do well, because we're doing so many things and so many of those things are interrelated and complex. How we communicate that is no easy task, because there's so many different messages out there. And you'll hear that when Mr. Robinette talks about Common Core, how this is going to be a critical factor, whether we're talking about our family resource centers reaching out to families in crisis, whether we're talking about accelerated learning and what we're trying to do for the kids that are more advanced, to Common Core. How are we doing all these things? To, of course, facilities and revamping our high schools so they're ready for 21st century learning. These are the things that you set direction for, and I think they're spot on, and I'm excited to move forward with these things on your behalf.
All right. Any questions, Marilyn?
I just have one. Under student achievement and accountability, our students will be taking a test. There will be testing in the spring based on the Common Core, and I can't remember what the acronym is for that test.
SBAC.
SBAC.
Right. No, I know.
No?
No. So our district is potentially going to be a pilot for the SBAC, but it's the SBAC itself isn't going to be implemented according to state guidelines for another 2 years. So in the meantime, we're in this gray zone where we're having to create our own assessments, and if we don't get the waiver, if California doesn't get the waiver, we still have to take at certain grade levels the CST. So at this point, Mrs. Roger, where we're at is if we adopt or if we become a part of the SBAC pilot, then we'll have some of those assessments, but they won't be across all grade levels. They'll be in specific areas. So at this point, what we're doing is we're designing our own, in mathematics, our own formative assessments to gauge whether or not our kids are showing progress under the Common Core, expectation. So we're working feverishly underneath the waterline to do that.
So I'm confused.
Okay.
If our students will be taking still the STAR test.
Yeah.
But our method of teaching will be aligned with the Common Core.
Correct.
Which is, if I understand it correctly, targets fewer areas but in greater depth.
That's accurate.
Okay. Then the STAR test targets more areas but more superficially, I suppose. I don't know what the... I can't think of the right word. Mrs. Sheffer says shallower. I don't know. It just, you know, how will we expect our students to perform on tests that ask questions in areas that they have not been instructed because they are receiving the new type of instruction. So are you following me?
I absolutely am following you. So last spring, Mrs. Shields came to you and asked permission. When she asked you to adopt as a district the Common Core State Standards, and with that approval, you were effectively saying that you were going to give us the freedom, and therefore the teachers the freedom to take a risk. And the risk that we're taking is that we're going to teach really well. We're going to teach maybe fewer content standards, as you say, in a deeper way and in a more complex way. And we may or may not have the kids take them mean anything. He literally challenges that notion. And that where we're going with Common Core is, and I probably won't do this as well, I won't probably do justice to this like Ms. McGrath or Mrs. Shields, but I understand it, which is the assessments that we're going to be requiring, the tasks that we're going to be requiring of students will be something they are completely unaccustomed to doing, which is explaining their thinking and explaining various ways to arrive at an answer. The answer is of lesser importance than the pathway process. And the process, which demonstrates a higher functioning level of thought. And with that, that's the path we're choosing to go down, and I think it's a good path. Now, back on communication, that's what Mr. Robinette's going to talk about, where it's a messy time for us because some families grab a hold and some students grab a hold of this, well, I got advanced on the CST, therefore I must be in that class. And the challenge here is how do we not disturb a process that seems to work for some. But clearly, when you look at the data, especially when you get beyond into the high school level, beyond middle school, we know our kids virtually across the board dive in mathematics. We know they struggle in language and in writing and in comprehension. And we know this when the text becomes more complex, when the tasks become more complex. The whole point of Common Core is to develop the foundation and the base of students and their thinking and their learning earlier so that when they get to the middle level and to the high level, high school level, they're more able, they have more capacity to think through problems and to communicate their thinking, which is really what we want. That's the real world. And so CST has a failing grade for achieving that.
So, let me just synthesize here, if I may, what I'm getting from you, I think I'm getting from you, is that when we gave Mrs. Shields and at that time Mrs. Delkiskamp the approval to go ahead with Common Core because it's the right instructional thing to do for kids, at the same time we were saying we understand that this may adversely affect our STAR test results, but we're willing to suffer that because our students are getting a greater depth of understanding. So when, as they move along, and when Common Core testing, I guess, is
when the SBAC comes on
mm-hmm. then they will be successful. So parents like myself, when my kids were in school, you know, in the summer when you'd get those STAR test results, it would be like, oh, they did really great here, really, you know, or need a little improvement there, whatever. They really won't be truly reflective, or may not be truly reflective in this year and possibly next year.
Yeah, I think that's a correct assessment. We're not abandoning accountability. We're simply changing how we're measuring student achievement and success.
Got it. Okay, thank you very much for taking the time on that.
I have two questions.
Yes.
One is, you were talking about teachers putting together their own assessments for this year and possibly next year. Are these assessments that can then be carried on into the future in some way? Because this sounds like a whole lot of effort to do just for 1 year. So I'm.
Oh yeah, no. Everything we're doing now is for a reason.
Okay.
And while the state is figuring out their SBAC program, what we're doing is we're developing model assessments that seem to be within the standards.
Okay.
Okay, and those assessments will really help teachers guide their own practices, their own teaching methodologies, and well as help students along. And so this will be our sort of baseline year. SBAC is in 2 years, maybe a year and a half, we'll see. It's an expensive endeavor because a lot of the assessments are performance oriented. So they're going to take a whole different kind of energy to determine how kids are doing. But the nice part of SBAC is that unlike the STAR, where kids take it in May, and we're not even getting it until August, September, which I always found as a principal to be ridiculous.
That's irritating.
Really, it's actually quite insulting to do that and then have to make sense of it. It's more of a political effort than it is to really help the child and the teacher in that environment. So with that said, the SBAC is trying to place for teachers and kids. So that's why I'm proud of where we're going. It's just going to be a little messy for a while.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And my other question is, are there advantages to being part of an SBAC pilot program? Will it give us a little practice and leg up?
You bet. In fact, it's interconnected to your previous question. So we're actually part of a consortium in the South Bay in Santa Clara, where they're actually, they've been hired by the state of California to do the SBAC design tests. Well, we're part of that group, and they're helping us design the assessments for ourselves. Now, with that said, if we get the pilot, if we are accepted into that, then we are free from the CST requirements, which is huge. But I don't have all the details on that just yet, so hopefully we'll get that information in the next month or so to you. Yeah? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just a couple of things. Thanks, Eric. I think one of the things that we just have to recognize is that when we start giving the Smarter Balance assessments, we're going to see test scores go down. And that's been the experience in New York, which started the Smarter Balance assessments, and shockingly so, with a state that's spending probably close to double what California's spending on schools. I'm glad to hear, and I'm glad for the decision we made in the spring, because I think that puts us a year ahead of everybody else. Making that commitment on the behalf of our students to start teaching them things and in ways that we know are going to lead to in-depth instruction and understanding. And I was excited when Mrs. Shields brought this forward when we had talked about this at the last meeting. But there's going to be a recognition, as Dr. Prater said, that we're going to see test scores decline. And I think the thing that we as a board know already, we've seen that, because when we've looked at the student results of the CST versus the more in-depth Common Core SBAC type of testing, we've seen those gaps. We've seen, you know, we're talking about the Straits of Magellan here. And I think the other thing just that will be considered by the state is there are different versions of the SBAC. There's the full scale version, which is more expensive than the lower scale version, which is a single test. And I think they haven't made a decision yet on which one they're going to go to. So that's to be determined too. I think there's just a lot that we don't know, and I don't know when we're going to know it, frankly.
And just so you know, Mr. Robinette's going to speak to this, but if we go back to the communication issue, it will be a very tricky road, because what's happening as a result of the Common Core is they've changed the traditional pathway in mathematics. And so we have the traditional pathway where kids are accelerated up and they might have pre-algebra in sixth grade, algebra in seventh grade, geometry in eighth grade, and then algebra 2. Does this sound familiar to you? I thought it would, Scott. And then algebra 2 in ninth grade. And that is a route for really ambitious, hardworking students. What we know in the trainings around mathematics strands in Common Core is that is being challenged because it's much more of an international model now that they're going after, which builds math understanding in a different way, more aligned, quite frankly, to best research on how human development is. The problem with this is that it's going to challenge the, if I go back to communications, it's going to challenge long-standing beliefs in our community and in across the state that my kid's bright in math and he's going to be in algebra in seventh grade. And so what we know now is that there's plenty of room to accelerate horizontally instead of vertically by virtue of the complexity of the strand of the problem. It's hard to communicate that, but we're trying to do that, and we're going to put that in place as best that we can. In the meantime, this mushy ground that we're standing on exists most prominently in middle school, because that's where the kids typically accelerate in mathematics. They typically accelerate in seventh grade through high school. If I want to take calculus as a junior, I better take algebra as a seventh grader. That's how that system typically works.
I just want to offer an observation of my own just like anecdotal experience with the Common Core questions and as vis-a-vis the former way of testing. So when we got our Friday notes last week with the little questions about, here's how we used to test, here's how we're going to test, and this relates also to the piece on communications. So I just was thinking, okay, I'm just going to see what that feels like if I'm a student and I'm taking this test or I'm taking this test. And, the first test was very familiar. It had multiple choice questions. The second test was multi-layered and had lots of different things you had to unpack to get to what the story's about. And when you first read through it, it's like, okay, I think I'll just move on to the next multiple choice question, because it really does require you to have some, you have to really put forth a lot of effort. You have to really start using all kinds of ways of looking at a problem. And to my surprise, I felt very dogged about finishing it, which was kind of a good feeling, but I had no idea if I was doing it correctly. So I sent it to Amy Shields, and, and I said, I'm just going to go out on a limb here, because I'm really curious to see how you would grade this on the rubric, and just to get the feedback about what it's about. And what I experienced as in just my own little experiential anecdotal way, is that I get now what we're trying to do with this kind of teaching, just from the test itself. I probably did terribly on the test, and she'll get back to me on that, I'm sure. But because you finish the test, and then it says, now show a different way that you would do it. And I'm like, I'm out of ideas. That's my way of doing it. But it challenges you to look at things a different way. And I think the students will get that when they start taking the tests. And more importantly, and this is on the communication piece of it, Dr. Prater and I shared with each other then, that wouldn't it be interesting is if we can put these questions of the week out to our community and let them see what we're trying to do and let them grapple with, okay, here's how I'd answer that. And so we all get to experience together what is different and how we're going to be teaching differently and how our expectations are going to be different about what the test scores are going to look like and, make this an e-ticket. We all go on the same ride. Yeah.
Book reading.
Right, exactly. Well,
Catherine, you caused quite the stir up on the Hill when you did that math problem. They said to me, wow, that board member, she's amazing. She tried this and did that. And, it was impressive that you did that. Thank you.
Okay, so next, why don't we talk about core understanding Common Core state standards?
Mr. Millar?
Yes, ma'am.
We're asking for you to adopt the
Well, I wouldn't want to stand in the way of that.
I'll move approval of the areas of focus for 2013-2014.
I'll second. Okay. Motion by Mr. Unger, second by the chair. Any further discussion? Oh, any comment from the public on this item? Okay, seeing no one. Any further comment from board members? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. Thank you, and Mr. Robinette.
Well, I thank you. And it sounds like you had such a great conversation about the Common Core. I'm not sure I have anything really to share. I'm here as you're talking, editing, and crossing out little things that I had here because there's no need in being redundant. Let me just share a little story, since I share stories, as you all know now. I had a neighbor who was a dog lover, and they just this guy was crazy about his dog. And forgive me if you've heard this before. And this was a dog lover. The dog slept with him in their bed and fed it special food and took it on vacation, kissed it on the lips, all the things that dog lovers do, And I was over at his house because he was putting a new section of a patio, a slab of the patio on, and he was doing it himself, and he had the forms there, and that cement had reached that point where it was, where it was just at that place where you don't want to mess with it. I mean, you got to be really careful. It's not wet anymore, but it's not dry yet either. And his dog goes bounding over this cement, and he just went nuts. He was holding the dog up and choking it and red in the face and yelling at it. And I said, wait a minute, you love that dog. And he said, yes, I love it in the abstract, but not in the concrete. I'm sorry.
Just led the board down.
Yeah, I know. I've come to discover that when we undergo massive changes in public education, we find ourselves in the interesting place between kind of those researched and somewhat abstract thinking and this concrete implementation of thinking. And that's really where we are in the Common Core, as your discussion showed. The state of California, I think it's still 46 states, although I think there's a couple states wavering, that they've embraced this direction. The board, your district, we're sailing full steam ahead. And actually, we've been on the trajectory for some time because Dr. Prater was alluding to, there are certain long-held expectations about course sequences and about acceleration, especially in the middle school or high school level. And we run the risk of kind of running across the concrete and shaking up our system before we're really ready for it. So Common Core will probably challenge us at some point to rethink the way we kind of sequence and compartmentalize mathematics. Because in America, for about 60 years, we've at the upper levels, we've kind of compartmentalized algebra, geometry, probability statistics, trigonometry as these separate units of study, whereas most countries have not done that and have not done that and had some degree of success. However, the last thing we want to do is limit a student's ability to access acceleration within our current system as they've known it, as they know it, or create changes that haven't been embraced by all of our stakeholders. So we're moving boldly forward, but we're also being careful, strategic, and deliberate. We're going to stress the standards for mathematical practice more than just change what we're doing in courses. We're going to stress perseverance, reasoning skills, constructing arguments, attending to precision. We're going to embrace the goal of no longer having students just solve problems, but to have students learn to engage in the task of problem solving. And that's subtle, but it's also rigorous. The same can be said for language arts, for science, for social studies, which are all new developing areas themselves. So the board, I think, in this coming year, what we are hoping in the area of communication is that you can look forward to presentations and conversations this year that are not full of educationalese and jargon. We want to show you what our students are doing. I mean, we'd like our presentations to be about what students are doing. And we want to show you how our teachers are preparing themselves. And we want to engage our parents and our community in thinking about this new direction. So that's why we're putting out talking point things like this, so we're all speaking the same language, and so that our principals can share the same things and share the same types of assessments. We want to be simple, and we want to share exactly what we mean when we in San Luis Coastal talk about rigor, relationships, and relevance in our own educational system as it relates to Common Core. So I'm probably not doing the board item, which says understanding the Common Core. I'm not sure we all fully understand it, but we're moving in a good direction. So I'm available for questions, but I have a feeling your discussion is pretty complete there.
Okay, I'll open it up to the public. Anybody from the public would like to speak on this issue? Okay, seeing no one, any board comment or questions, Jim?
Well, we are in a period of transition, and so that means that as far as math goes, we will be hanging on to some of our old nomenclature and changing how we name things and identify courses. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Until we move
fully
into Common Core?
Yeah, I think we're in this kind of middle ground where we're not, you know, we haven't come to the board and said, let's change all our course titles and begin this whole integrative math sequence. We're probably not ready for that. I don't think our public is ready for that. What we do know is we have to start stressing these standards. The state's adopted them, even though they haven't, you know, given us exactly what it is that we're supposed to be measuring them by. We've adopted them. So we just want to move carefully. We're going to stress the problem solving. We're going to stress the seven factors or pieces, I don't know, there's a name for them, for math practice. And so we're going to be stressing those within our math curriculum. But as far as the day we decide to say, well, we're no longer doing Algebra 1, we're doing this integrative math program in ninth grade, you know what that's like. We've been through math wars in California before. And so we're trying to stress the practices, and we'll work on the curriculum alignment as we go.
Yeah, and I just again want to reiterate how when I look at the Common Core standards and the LCFF and the requirements, I think we're way ahead of the game for most school districts in California. One of the keys is aligning our resources, our budget, to the academic achievement of students and being able to demonstrate that. One of the pieces is that we'll have to have an academic accountability plan that's presented to the county superintendent of schools that shows that alignment between, again, student achievement and our budget. And I think we started to do that last year. When we looked at, actually 2 years ago, when we looked at the initiatives, we started doing the SMART goals and then started attaching dollar costs to those. And I don't know if it was intentional at the time because we didn't know about the LCFF. We kind of knew Common Core was heading down the road. But I think when we look at what our district is doing, again, there's going to be a lot we're doing. You know, I was going to compare it to the Los Osos sewer. There's going to be a lot of streets torn up. Eventually, it's going to be fine. But we started on the road early.
Motion by Mrs. Roger, second by Mrs. Sheffer. Any discussion or comments by the board? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. You're officially superintendent, our assistant superintendent for personnel. business practice. You know what you are. Just go do the job.
A little bit of both right now.
Yes. And next we'll take up the contract of assistant superintendent Rick Robinette. This is a renewal based on a satisfactory evaluation, which, not to say it was just satisfactory, but it's at least satisfactory. And we'll open up to the public for comment. Okay, seeing no one, bring it back to the board. Go ahead, Chris.
I'll make a motion in spite of his poor puns to approve the contract for Mr. Robinette.
And I'll second it only because of that lovely story he told Monday at the back-to-school kickoff. Any questions, comments by the board? Okay, seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. And lastly, we have the renewal contract for Dr. Eric Prater as the district superintendent. Any member of the public like to speak on this side? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back.
I move approval of Dr. Prater's contract.
Okay.
I'll second it.
All right, we have a motion by Mrs. Eisendrath Rogers and a second by Mr. Questenberry. Any discussion by the board? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. All right. We're stuck with them for another term. And now we will go to the delegation of signature authority. I guess we will have to do that. Who's going to explain this one? Mr. Hankerson.
John? One of the first items of business that you conduct every year as the fiscal year begins is to renew the delegation of signature authority. So this changes as our personnel changes, and this resolution will reflect the addition of Mr. Pinkerton with signature authority in his new role, and it would be a roll call vote.
Oh, okay. I'll make a motion to approve the resolution number 011314.
I'll second that.
Okay, and should have gone to the public. Chris always helps me with going to the public. And it's a thankless job because it's so rarely is there a person in the public who wants to speak to this item. But would anyone like to speak to the board regarding this? I got a little ahead of myself. Okay, seeing no one, we'll bring it back. We have a motion by Mr. Unger and
Mr. Questenberry.
Thank you. A motion by the chair and a second by Mr. Questenberry. I can't even say it's getting late. It's not that late. Roll call vote.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Questenberry?
Aye.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Passes 6-0.
Excellent. Now we'll move on to the action consent agenda. Let me know if you want an item pulled. Item 9.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.02, disposition of surplus property. 9.03, acceptance of donations. 9.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 9.05, approval of purchase orders. 9.06, approval of quarterly reports on uniform complaint filings, the Williams settlement. 9.07, appointment of representatives and alternatives to athletic leagues for 2013-2014. 9.08, action on a claim against the district, Nicholas DeLoss Myrold. Okay. 9.09, approval of out-of-state field study trip, FFA. 9.09, okay. And 9.10, approval of adult school classes for 2013-2014. Okay, we'll entertain a motion on items 9.01 through 9.07 and 9.10.
I'll move approval of 9.01 to 9.07 and 9.10.
Very good. And I'll second. Okay, any questions, comments by the board? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. We will go to Mr. Questenberry on item 9.08.
My question on this one is just who has sort of a responsibility for, I know that this will go to CISC. Do they do any kind of investigation of, and then do we get some kind of feedback from them in terms of not just whatever settlement they make, but if there's any findings of fact here?
Yeah, so what I would say is that, you know, in talking to CIS, the reason why they recommended recommendation for the board to deny the claim.
And Catherine, 9.09.
I just want to acknowledge the parliamentary procedure program at SLO High School. This is the second year in a row that the novice parliament procedure team at SLO High came in first in the state in terms of novice teams and will represent the state of California at nationals in Louisville. And I just specifically want to acknowledge Anna Bates, the advisor, who was also, and I might not get this title right, but she was also recognized as the top FFA advisor in the state, teacher advisor in the state. So congratulations to Anna.
Thank you, Catherine, for letting us know that. Yeah,
absolutely. I'd like to move approval of 9.09.
And I'll second that. Okay. Any further discussion by board members? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. And now we will move on to advanced agenda. And I'm on behalf of Mr. Buckman, who couldn't be here this evening. He would like to propose that we withdraw the resolution regarding changes to Proposition 13 at this time. It may be a bit premature for consideration of that item. And our board members, do we have consensus on the removal of the item from the advanced agenda? Okay, great. Thank you. Any other advanced agenda discussion by the board? Jim?
I notice as we're moving to our new model with the counselors, especially the elementary counselors and the reduced high school counselors, where they've been assigned and so forth. First, I want to commend personnel for there are efforts there and so forth. What I'm kind of interested in at some point, maybe in Friday notes or something, is a discussion of how we are going to try to, as a district, coordinate with the various other community resources to sort of fill the void, if that's the best way to describe it, but how we're going to implement the new model and utilize the various resources in the community to deal with some of the problems that these counselors now only have, let's say, half the time to deal with.
And I'd support that. And also, I think it's encapsulated or encompassed in what Jim said, but the impact on the family resource centers that are going to end up taking up some of the slack, and I think they probably already have to some extent.
I'd be really pleased, before you decide whether to do that as an advance agenda, I would strongly support that. I think it'd be nice if we could provide the board with some information relatively soon about placements and staffing, what we're doing, but I also think it would be an excellent board item to have Mr. Dowler come kind of present
exactly
the whole
what
plan.
I was going to say.
I think it would be a great future item for us.
Good. Looks like we have consensus on that. Great. Thank you. Marilyn, do you have anything else?
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say, but Mr. Robinette thought soon. I thought maybe we could give Mr. Dowler a little time to get the year off and running and then report to us. But however it comes to us, I think it's great as a board item rather than Friday notes.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Any other advanced agenda discussion by board members? Okay, seeing none, we will move on to notification of expiration of personnel commissioner's term. Oh, all right.
So, yeah, it's just notifying the board. So okay. part of our duties is to notify the board prior to September 1st.
And we'll get to a reappointment.
Yes.
Like
and
we
so
do every
the
year.
Personnel commissioners, this is Becky French. Commissioner French is actually the commissioner that's appointed by the other two commissioners. And so she has said that she would like to be reappointed. And so
okay.
That should happen soon.
Great. Thank you. Do we need to take any action tonight on this? Okay. And reports by board members. Chris.
Yeah. I was asked to address the State Board of Education last week, which I did, regarding the LCFF, and on behalf of our area for the School Boards Association. And I just think the reason that I was asked to do it was there were input sessions throughout California where people could speak to the State Board of Education, which is developing rules for implementation of the LCFF. And as Dr. Prater was explaining, those rules have not been formulated yet and decided on. We're going to be living with sort of nebulous rules before they establish them. And I think we're talking maybe January, maybe next year. We don't know yet. So I was able to speak. And I think probably the biggest message that the School Boards Association wanted to get out was, It should be quite the trip.
What's the date?
I'm going on the, I believe it's the 15th, and I return on the 19th. Yeah.
Do us proud. And any further reports by board members? Catherine.
I just wanted to add to what I said earlier about Ms. Bates. And the reason I know this, and just as an aside, the reason I know about Mrs. Bates and Jody Evans is that when I went on the website for Slow High, just as a parent, you know, to sort of register, they have this very interactive website right now, which I have to applaud Mr. O'Connor for, because it caught my eye, and so I watched everything they were showing, and they showed these teachers, and they were featuring Mrs. Bates and also Jody Evans, who received the FFA Teacher of the Year distinction. And so anyway, I thought that was very helpful, and it was a very good communication tool for parents to know about what's going on. They mentioned also the Skills USA winners, but it was what struck me about it was that it wasn't a static image, and it wasn't information. It was, you know, it showed them working, and kind of caught your eye. So I just want to make sure I didn't leave out Mrs. Evans.
Thanks, Catherine. And I'll just for the board, we were able to attend the back to school kickoff on Monday morning at Morro Bay High School.
Mr. Unger had a commitment with the County Office of Education, and he wasn't able to be there, but it was very inspirational. I think it's a terrific way to start the year. Great energy, and I was glad to be involved. So, and with that, thank you all. We'll be adjourned until September 3rd, 2013, right here. Don't miss it.